have the education committee is in order. It's 8:03 in the morning. Present are senators Betty Davis, Gary Stevens, and my good friend from Nome, Senator Olson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. We have on the agenda today bills previously heard, the SB 33 post-secondary education scholarship bill, and then a first hearing of a bill, the compulsory school attendance age and truancy bill by Senator Davis. In the packets, we should have a copy of a committee substitute for the for SB 33. I'm going to ask staff to present the committee substitute and talk about what the differences are between it and the original bill.
I don't have that. Thank you.
Oh, you don't?
Mr. Chairman, is that / E?
It is.
/ E. Dana, if you could identify yourself for the record and just go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dana Owen. I'm staff to this committee, and I work for Senator Elton, the chair. Today, we're going to present to you a committee substitute for Senate Bill number 33. This is essentially the same bill that you reviewed at our last meeting. We've got two changes, and I would direct your attention to page 2 of the bill, line 25, and this is the / E version of the work draft. You'll notice on page 25 we had discussed a cumulative grade point average of 3.0 in the original bill. That has been reduced to a grade point average of 2.5 for qualification for the program. And then on page 3 you'll see incorporated the amendment that had been circulating at our first meeting on the bill. We've added on the last line, line 31, again to expand the qualifications for which institutions would be eligible to participate. You'll see the words or by the United States Department of Education. And again, that's the same amendment that you saw in our first hearing. Are there any other questions?
I see no other questions. We also have somebody from the sponsor's office if you have any questions of them. I would note that the only other thing that came up for discussion that I remember with any clarity at all is the discussion on whether or not the loan program is available for postgraduate study. And I think the answer, and I'm looking kind of at the sponsor's representative, is that it does as long as the postgraduate program is in the state. Is that correct? Okay. The record should reflect that there was a nod yes. And I can't remember, I think it was either Senator Davis or Senator Olson that had recommended the change to 2.5 from 3.0 so that the program would be expanded. Senator Davis, okay. Are there any questions either of my staff or Senator Ellis' staff before we go?
Well, actually, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Senator Olson.
My question actually has to do with another point that's related to the bill. It was information that was passed out before. So, Senator Stevens, if you got something that's more on point, go ahead and do that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the funding of this, and if someone on your staff could talk about that. I mean, it's a great program, but if there's no money, it's a pretty empty shell. So how are we going to fund this? Where is the money coming from? When is that going to take place?
Thanks. Senator Stevens, Mr. Moe, I'm looking at you, and it may be appropriate as a spokesperson for the sponsor to step forward and answer the question.
All right, my name is Nick Moe. I'm legislative aide for Senator Ellis, and that's a good question through the chair, Senator Stevens, on how we fund this. Our goal and our intent is to establish the actual fund or endowment first. And then once the fund is established, we are then able to accept either private donations to the fund, possibly federal stimulus money, as well as obviously general fund money from the state. So it was our goal to establish the fund primarily, or establish the fund first, and then look at a possible appropriations bill afterwards.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could respond, I appreciate that, and I see all these young faces here, and I just want to make sure people don't think that the money's going to become available when we pass this, that that there are several steps to go, and we need support and finances to make sure that we can go to the next step where the scholarships are actually available.
Thanks. Thanks, Senator Stevens. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking through the packet, I noticed that there were a number of accredited post-secondary institutions in Alaska outside the University of Alaska system. As we go down into one of the notes, there's a note there that Alaska Christian College in Sedalia has met certain criteria and is now a candidate for accreditation for the Association of Biblical Higher Education. The college participates or anticipates completing a multi-year process sometime in 2012. The reason I bring it up was in my district, from my district, there are a dozen students that are there. What does this mean for those students when they call me? Are they eligible for this scholarship that's available or not?
Through the
and when will they if they're not now?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Olson. Which note are you referring to?
You look on the one of the handouts that was passed out originally. It, on the top, it says accredited post-secondary institutions. Mm-hmm. In Alaska, outside the university system?
And the Alaska Bible College?
It's actually the Alaska Christian College in Soldotna, four lines from the bottom, has met certain criteria and is now a candidate for accreditation from the Association of Biblical Higher Education. The college anticipates completing the multi-year process sometime in 2012.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Olson, what that means is that they are in the current process of getting their accreditation, so if this bill were to take effect this year, they wouldn't be eligible until 2012, since they're going through their own accreditation process. So, by definition, they would be ineligible until they get accredited.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I could just clear up in my own mind, so when they call my office, until they get accredited by the Association of Biblical Higher Education, is that right?
Yeah, through the chair. Yes, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson, why don't we allow Ms. Behrens to do a follow-up? I see her back in the audience there, and she probably has a very good understanding of what accreditation could mean and to that institution. Sorry, Diane, I don't know if you were anticipating coming to the mic or not. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Certainly. For the record, Diane Behrens, Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, and I'm always available to answer questions, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Senator Olson, it really depends on the program the student is enrolled in. As you're aware, the Christian College does college prep curricula, as well as they're starting into college curricula. As a candidate, for accreditation, if the U.S. Department of Education has approved them to participate in the financial aid programs, they would qualify for this. So that's an if. We would need to verify with the college where they are in that process, but it's possible that they would be eligible this fall.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up question, Ms. Behrens.
General.
So it's my understanding that if they're in a remedial program and not taking college courses, they are not eligible. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further questions? What's the will of the committee? We're prepared to move this on.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Davis.
I move that we move Senate CS plus.
Can I interrupt for just a moment?
Yes,
I've just been handed a sign-in sheet, and there are several people that are available for questions, but a couple of people that wanted to speak to the bill. And before we do that, I should invite them to the table. Is Joseph Blanchard in the audience? Joseph. I don't want to tell you what you should say, but I think the committee is prepared to move the bill. So if you can speak as long as you want if you're against it, and if you're for it, okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Joseph. Identify yourself for the record, and go ahead and make your comments.
For the record, my name is Joseph Blanchard, and I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I come here in two capacities, one as a student, always excited to improve access for my students at the university, and also as a newly elected borough assemblyman for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, who had passed a resolution in support of this legislation. I just wanted to make some quick comments that I was there last year when the students had decided that this was an important issue for them, that access to the university. We'd always supported capital projects, operating budgets, but this was our issue. It was our torch. We took the time to move forward and try to convince the state legislature to design a bucket for us, a place to put the funds for our students. And my colleagues on the borough assembly had agreed with me that this was a great opportunity for our K-12 students, along with the Anchorage municipality. And hopefully tonight, the city and borough of Juneau will join us as local governments who support this legislation. And I hope for a quick passage, and hopefully we can move forward with a great program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joseph, and congratulations. Are there questions for Joseph? Thank you. Tom Hewitt.
Hi.
Yeah, just give your name for the record, Tom.
Tom Hewitt, last name Hewitt. I've got a little sister named Deborah, and she's set to graduate from Lathrop High School in Fairbanks this spring, and she's just been accepted to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and is planning to go there for school. And my parents are good people, but they've never really been able to put much money aside for Deborah for her school. And she's known that, so she's put some money aside in the Alaska College Savings Program. But my dad had a stroke this past year, and so that's basically all the money she has, and she knows that, so she's been working on the side while she's been attending high school classes, and that's been good for her, and she's been able to save some money, but her grades have suffered a little bit because her time at home has been shortened because she's been working. And so she's not eligible. She won't be eligible for the UA College, the Alaska Scholars Program. So I know that, the university has sent a lot of us here, and that obviously that's the reason why, why we're here. But the real reason why I'm here is for Deborah, because she would be one of the people who this program would help. And if you need to kind of look for a person who's a good example of the people who we're fighting for in this bill, you don't need to look any farther than my little sister.
Thank you. Questions of Tom? Seeing none. Thanks, Tom. Carl Wing has signed up, and there's not a why on whether or not Carl wants to testify. Carl, is Carl here? Carl, if you could give your name for the record and proceed. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carl Wing. I'm a student of the university, and I'm just here to quickly just say thank you for all the effort that the legislator has been putting in this bill. Like my colleague over there, there's several students that I'm aware of that it is hard to pay for tuition as it continues to increase year after year after year. And I know several students that are close friends of mine that have to work two jobs, three jobs to actually meet the demand of paying for tuition. And because of that, their grades do suffer. And these students are amazing. I mean, their talents just soar beyond belief. And they are the future of Alaska because their passions and their gifts are part of the puzzle to help solve the issues that we face today. And the institution is doing a phenomenal job preparing Alaska students to stay in Alaska, to get educated, to get a great education that you can get anywhere else. And with that being said, I'll just keep my comments short, that this bill will help keep Alaska's best students in Alaska, and it will help them find other alternatives for financial aid and to focus more in the classroom and, like, maybe less time at the job, because I mean we want to make sure that our students are qualified and ready for the workforce and ready to solve any issues that come our way. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions for Carl? Seeing none. That is that's the end of public testimony, and sorry for the interruption, Senator Davis.
Chairman, I do have one final question for the bill sponsor. since all these students are here. And that has to do with, when do you anticipate, assuming this bill passes this session, when can the students anticipate these funds being available?
Mr. Moe.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, right now I can't give you a specific date, but it's hopeful that that we can take a look at some private money, specifically what comes to mind, the Taylor Foundation, as well as possible federal stimulus money. I know they've allocated some money for education, so we're taking a look at that as well. But we're hopeful that we will be able to fund the program within 2 years.
Within 2 years.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Davis.
Yes, I'd like to move Senate Bill number 33, CS, for Senate Bill number 33 out of the committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, the bill is moving. And I suspect there may be some people that want to vacate the room now. The next bill is an interesting bill also, so you're welcome to stay. It's on compulsory school age and truancy. But let's take a brief recess while we're signing the report. Senate Education is back, and the next item of business is the presentation of Senate Bill 102, which raises the compulsory school attendance age and has some truancy issues also involved with it. We do have people, we do have one person who has signed up to testify publicly also. So, Don, if you could identify yourself for the record and begin the presentation.
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Don Burrell, legislative aide for Senator Betty Davis. SB 102 is an act relating to compulsory compulsory school attendance relating to the crime of contributing to a delinquency of a minor and relating to school disciplinary action and truancy. SB 102 increases the Alaska compulsory school attendance age from 7 to 16 to 7 to 18. At the same time, it necessarily amends the crime of contributing to the delinquency of a minor from the maximum age 16 to 18. This bill will not preclude parents from homeschooling children or using charter or alternative schools or any other of the 12 exceptions to the compulsory education, including completion of grades 12 or graduation from secondary school before the age of 18. In last year's academic school year, 3,283 Alaskan students dropped out, and 62.4% of the graduating students actually graduated, per the Department of Education and Early Development report. Nationally, the graduation rate is 70% or higher. The highest dropout rate in Alaska are among minorities, with Alaska Natives at double the rate of all others. These numbers have not changed much in many years, and Alaska's compulsory school attendance age has also not changed in decades. 17 states have increased the compulsory school attendance age to 18. 9 additional states maintain that age at 17, and 23 states maintain the age at 16. The legislative intent by states which have increased compulsory school attendance age to 18 is to encourage more students to stay in school long enough to graduate, to attend institution of higher education, and decrease dropout rates, juvenile crime, and teen pregnancy. Studies have shown that students without a diploma earn less than 75% of those with a diploma. They are more likely to live in poverty, go to jail, and have health problems. The purpose of this bill is to deal directly with the dropout rates and the graduation rates of Alaska students. And with that, I will open myself up to questions.
Questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an enormously important issue, and one that we've all struggled with. How do we help kids from dropping out? So could you tell me in a very straightforward, logical, 1-2-3 way, how increasing the age to 18 will improve, lessen the dropout rate? What's your logic that leads from adding another year on to compulsory that would lead to more students graduating? And do you have any statistics or any data to back that up?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Senator Davis.
Since I would like to answer the question for you. I don't have all the answers to it, but there's material probably in your package that address some of the things that you have asked. But increasing the age from 16 to 18 would give us 2 more years to work with those students in order to prepare them for graduation. And we began to concentrate on graduating and not dropouts. This is not a bill that's just going to say that we're going to force kids to be in school and not do anything for them. We know that the more that we help students and give them a meaningful reason for being in school, that many of the students that drop out don't drop out because they're a felon. They drop out for various other reasons. If they have some caring person in the school that will help them get through a situation, it might make them stay in. We also know that 16 to 18 is already been proven in many states that that has helped them with their graduation rates. We are not trying to say that you have to have truant officers to force these students in there, but we're going to say that we're going to do programs that's going to be beneficial to them. Alternative programs where they can get one-on-one training and take their classes. You having someone that they can go and speak to and know that that person is going to help them. We might be able to get more counselors in the school. We might have graduation coaches in the schools. Various schools are already setting up various programs. And many of our administrators, principals, superintendents are very supportive of this because they believe that will help them cut down on the dropout rate and improve the graduation rate.
Thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions of the sponsor or sponsor staff? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at some of the enforcement policies for compulsory school attendance, what kind of difference will that have on the until the age of 18?
Would you repeat your question?
The question has to do with will these enforcement policies have a negative effect on the person that's going to be the what kind of record are they going to have on their record, essentially, if they've been forced into the mandatory age of 18?
I don't, it's not going to be a felony.
Okay.
If that's what you're referring to, because it's going up to age 18, which would be the age of majority, there will, the reason that we have the enforcement is there because they are at that age where we could mandate that they go to court. But there's nothing in this bill that's saying that we're going to have truant officers on the street to pick up the kids or have them locked up or whatever. It, the goal is to keep them in the school, not out of the school.
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue.
Senator Olson.
I actually got a call from my one of my constituents that said, will the attitude of the students harm those students that want to be there if you're forcing somebody else to be there that doesn't want to be there?
You know, I've heard that in particular last year when we had this bill to come before us, because at that time we brought this bill to us and we were trying to go with the truant officers and doing all those kinds of things, and parents were saying, well, I want my child in school to be able to learn and not have those that's disrupting the schools so they would keep my child from getting all they need to get. Well, we know that the school system has a system set up to deal with that. We don't just let kids sit up in the classroom and misbehave and not have some action to take. So I don't see that as a problem.
Mr. Chairman, one last question.
Senator Olson.
What effect does this have on private secondary schools?
This is...
So if a private school can go ahead and continue on and doesn't necessarily have to have the compulsory age there?
It has nothing to do with private schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Additional questions of the sponsor? I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but I think it would be helpful if we could have Mr. Jeans from the department come to the mic for a moment. Mr. Jeans, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education.
And I have two questions for you, Mr. Jeans, and then after that you may want to discuss the fiscal note just briefly.
But, thank you.
The first question is a follow-up to what to Senator Olson's question. I mean, what happens now to a 16-year-old that doesn't attend school? I mean, what are the implications for the student or the student's family?
Mr. Chairman, under the current law, once a child turns 16, they are no longer required to attend public school.
Let me amend that then to a 15-year-old. I'm trying to get to the root of Senator Olson's question about what accrues to either the student or the student's family or the student's guardian if, in fact, they don't attend school.
Thank you for the clarification. Mr. Chairman, under 1430.010, the compulsory attendance law itself places a requirement on the guardian of the child to ensure that that child attends public school. If the child does not attend, then it's the guardian that is the one that's in violation of state law. And as Senator Davis pointed out, it is not a felony. It's referred to as a violation in 1430.020. And so there are some monetary fines associated with that.
Okay. And that does not change by, I mean, the same kind of penalties accrue if the law is bumped up to...
Mr. Chairman, if the law is bumped up, then it would, the same penalties would apply to a 16 or a 17-year-old as they do to a 15-year-old currently. And I should say to the parents of.
Okay. And Mr. Jeans, has the department taken a position on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, we're neutral on this. I know that Commissioner Ledoux has spoken with Senator Davis. His main concern is that we provide these students additional opportunities that are dropping out. As Senator Davis pointed out, they're not all bad kids. They've lost interest. Many of them have lost interest. So in our discussions about the bill itself, the question I asked, will it harm any child moving the compulsory age from 16 to 18? And we believe the answer is no. Right now, with the current law at 16, if a child makes that decision to drop out, they drop out. If you move the law to 18, they know the law is 18 now, not 16.
Okay. And just, I promised only two questions. I have a third. The way I read the bill, if a 17-year-old drops out and begins working on a GED, is my understanding of the bill correct that working on a GED does not excuse you from this law because it talks about a secondary education institution?
Mr. Chairman, you're exempted from the compulsory school age once you've been awarded your GED, not while you're working on it.
Okay. Any other questions before we get to the fiscal note? Senator Stevens.
Well, just I'm already looking at that fiscal note, and just make sure I understand this, Mr. Jean. So the foundation formula says $10,000 per student. So if a kid drops out at 17 and 18 currently, the district loses those funds. They don't receive the funds for the students that drop out. It just seems to me logical that then if we keep the student in school for an additional 2 years, that makes some funds available the districts wouldn't have had otherwise to do counseling, to do alternative programs. I mean, is that what you think the districts will do if this were to happen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that Senator Stevens, that's our hope, is that the districts would take these additional funds and create those programs that will spark that interest in students. And Mr. Chairman, if I may speak to the fiscal note,
Before you begin, I'd like the record to reflect that Senator Huggins has joined us, and Senator Huggins, the bill SB 102 has been presented to the committee, and Mr. Jeans is responding to questions on behalf of the department.
Morning.
Good morning.
Thanks. I'm sorry for the interruption.
That's all right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to apologize to the committee for getting the fiscal note in late. We were struggling with it, trying to figure out how to calculate it. And first I want to say is I believe that this fiscal note is probably on the high end. But let me explain the rationale that we used. We went to our database because we have a unique student identifier in the state now. And we looked at all the students that were between the ages of 16 and 18 that were there on count date in October, but were no longer in school and did not graduate in the summer oasis. And we identified 1,661 students that have moved out of the system without a high school diploma. And on average, statewide, the foundation formula generates about $10,000 per child. Now, some of these students may have moved out of state, and we simply don't know that if they went to another public school. And that's why I would say I believe that this is on the high end. And I'd be happy to work with the committee to revise this fiscal note to something that the committee's more comfortable with. But we simply took the raw data, and there was 1,661 students between the ages of 16 and 18 that left our system that we could not identify.
And I think that would be helpful, and I don't want to speak for everybody on the committee, but it would be helpful to get at some point in the near future, get some kind of assumptions from the department on how many of these, and I'm going to use as an example, Coast Guard family that is transferred and that has a 16 or a 17 or an 18-year-old student in the system. An assumption like that, or perhaps, another example would be some of these may be entering a homeschool situation or going to a private school as suggested by Senator Olson. So that would be very helpful,
right,
as we consider the implications of the fiscal note.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Davis.
I appreciate the fact that Mr. Jeans is willing to work on that, but that's really not a concern of mine about the amount of money that they have on here, because first of all, if those students don't show up, they're not going to be in the count, and they're not going to be in the foundation formula. The money would never be utilized anyway. So it's just the number, as far as I'm concerned. You know, if that many show up, that's what it costs. But if it's less than that, it's going to be less than this amount.
Thank you.
That's something that finance can deal with.
It is. I guess in a minor rebuttal, having a good fiscal note that is less is going to be helpful for the discussion.
Oh, sure. I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well,
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, we need to be as accurate as possible. I mean, that's the point. I mean, this whatever we do, we have to have confidence in. And so I'd like to narrow any gap so that we are confident no matter what we're doing, whether it's students or, but it's the state in the people's money.
Thank you. Additional questions for Mr. Jeans? Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up with that, Mr. Chairman, I know it's a complex subject, and I know it's hard to get records, but it does seem like the district should have an idea. You know, how many kids drop out because, family issues, or they need to go to work to support a family, or how many kids drop out because they're bored, and how many kids drop out because they're in trouble with the law? And it just seems to me that we should be able to figure out who those kids are. Eddie, Mr. Jeans, is there some assistance you can give us there?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, when students leave the system, there are identifiers that the districts are supposed to use to tell us why the student left. And in many cases, if the student is left to another school, we know that. And those students would not be included in this number. These are the ones that have left the system, and for whatever reason, they're not showing up anywhere else in our public schools. And beyond that, I couldn't tell you. We don't have the data at the department to tell you who, why, where, when. We could tell you when they left, but not why.
Okay, thank you.
So if I can follow up on Senator Stevens' question. I mean, so if the school identifies that this student was a member of a Coast Guard family and the family was transferred, would you know that? Does the school identify to that level?
There's an indicator that they're supposed to put in there that says they transferred to another state.
Okay. But that doesn't you're saying that doesn't always happen?
That's what I'm saying, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't always happen. I'd have to say they're much better at recording the actual transfers within state.
Okay. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In recognition of efforts by the current Commissioner of Education, I mean, the end of this past week, there was a graduation rate forum in Anchorage held, and it's going to be held on a continuum, and which I give him credit for that, because quite frankly, in my estimation, for what it's worth, this is one of the issues that we have been less than attentive towards, and it's an important issue because it's about 40% of our kids do something and we don't know what they're doing, and the commissioner is taking some good worthy people and pulling them together and say, let's talk about this and let's have an action plan, and so I just congratulate him for doing that.
Thank you. Additional questions for Mr. Jeans? Seeing none, thanks Mr. Jeans for answering the questions and speaking to the fiscal note. And we have one person who has signed up to testify, Ms. George, Patricia George.
Good morning.
Good morning, Patricia. If you could just repeat your name for the record and give your testimony.
My name is Patricia George, and I represent the Alaska State Literacy Association. The Alaska State Literacy Association is the largest professional education association in Alaska, with over 500 members from across the state. The Alaska State Literacy Association strongly believes that mandatory school attendance age should be lowered from age 7 to age 6. As recently as this past Friday, this committee heard testimony as to the importance of preparing children for school at an earlier age. The Alaska State Literacy Association feels that children should be required to attend school at an earlier age. I provided the committee with a chart and summary showing that 32 states require students attend school by age 6. From my personal experience as a first grade teacher, I found that there is no way to compel parents to have their children attend school regularly or on time. It is important to have children come to school regularly so that they don't miss critical stage steps in the learning process. Senate Bill 102 is an appropriate vehicle to make change in the state statute. We urge you to amend Senate Bill 102 to lower the mandatory school age from 7 to 6. I provided staff, and you should have in your packet a proposed amendment. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Ms. George? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. George. I guess I'm embarrassed to say that I never even looked at the early age requirement. Could you give us just a quick burst on the history of and the rationale for 7 versus 6?
I don't know. I have tried since Senator Duncan was a member of the legislature. I have spoken to different members of the legislature on this personally and then as the state. 2 years ago, we tried to. A long time ago, I was told by a staffer that it was tried to be lowered and a fiscal note was added. But since there is a new and important interest in getting children into school earlier, we felt that it was appropriate this time to try and get it lowered. Yes?
Senator Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony. This is not the first time that we've had this brought before us before. In fact, I've introduced legislation on the House side as well on the Senate side to lower it. First of all, I tried to drop it to 5 when we began to have full-day kindergarten. So that didn't go through. But well, the last 2 years, maybe even the last 4 years, I introduced legislation to lower it to 6. But it's always been 7 in the statute, age 7. Mm-hmm. And we have, for some reason, not been able to get that changed. I thought about adding the lower age and the higher age on this particular bill. But I thought it was so important that we tried to do something about the graduation rate that I just chose the upper age and didn't put age 6 on it. I'm not opposed to that. The thing is, I want a bill that will probably pass.
Yeah.
And I know that's, for some reason, we have not been able to move from that age 7 compulsory age, even though the legislation's come back year after year. This might be the year to do it. I don't know.
Senator Stevens.
I guess my question is, first, that every kid I know starts school at 6. I don't know anybody that starts school at 7 in my circle of people that I know. And so my question is, what difference does this make? I mean, are there a lot of kids who are not starting until 7 in this state? Is that a problem?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, as I said, as a first grade teacher, I felt the need for this lowering of the age. There are many parents who feel that they don't have to have their children in school if it's not mandated. So they come to school late every day, or they come 1 or 2 days a week, but not on a regular basis. And when I go to my attendance clerk, or when I did, I'm retired now, and said, what can we do about this? The answer was, not a thing. We cannot mandate that they be in school because it's not in the state statute.
I appreciate that. I guess what I was asking for was some data. Some statistics to show that is the case. Because I personally have not experienced that.
I do not have that data with me, but I'm sure I can get it from the school district here.
It'd be important to have that, I think.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Davis.
That data can be provided. There are many people that can speak to that, and some data is available. And we do have many kids that do not go to school on a regular basis, as she said, because it's not compulsory. They don't have to have them there.
That's right.
If they want them to go a day or two, they can go. If not, they don't have to go at all. And you have 7-year-olds coming in. You don't want to start them off in kindergarten. So you got to put them maybe in the first grade rather than even into kindergarten. And it's a problem. It is a problem in this state.
And in my letter, I also included a paragraph about the fact that No Child Left Behind requires that all students be reading on grade level at the end of third grade. Well, if we don't expect children to be in school until age 7, it's going to be very difficult for many of them to be reading on grade level at the end of third grade at age 8 or 9.
I'm going to suggest, too, that one of the things that we'll try to do before the bill is heard again is get in touch with the department and try to figure out how other states handle the age at the bottom. Maybe we don't need to do that. It looks like Ms. George might have some numbers for us.
Well, Senator, through the chair, I have made a summary of the chart that I've included in your packet, but I didn't put all the information that it provides in the summary paragraph. It also shows that there are only 7 states in the nation that do not require districts to provide kindergarten. And there are 17 that require students to attend kindergarten. I don't know if that helps answer that question or not, but the states are moving toward mandatory kindergarten. And as your expert last Friday mentioned, with the emphasis on getting these kids into preschool to get them ready for school, we need them in school when they're so that they can progress through. So,
I hesitate to ask this question of an expert whose expertise is grounded in this, especially as a first grade teacher, but it would seem to me that it's maybe a different question. I mean, because I'm assuming there is no, I'm assuming that if we didn't, if we left it at 7, that meant a 6-year-old could get into kindergarten. And so mandatory kindergarten may not completely address the age at what, which is, for example, a 5-year-old, if we didn't change the age, may not be compelled to go to kindergarten in the same way that a 6-year-old, you can't force them to attend school every day.
Through the chair, the states that require school districts to have a kindergarten available, many of them do not require the student to be in kindergarten. All the states that have lowered their age to 5, of course, do. But many of the states have the option of the student attending.
Okay. Thank you. Additional, Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, just a caution here that I know there are a lot of good things that can and should be done. This bill could cover everything. It could. But it gets a little top-heavy and develops opposition as you go along if you keep adding things to it. And so just a caution that if the main thing here is to change from 16 to 18, then maybe we need to concentrate on that. Because if now suddenly we're talking about mandatory kindergarten, that's not where that bill started. And it might not be where you want to go with this bill, because it might then get so much opposition that falls of its own weight.
Senator Davis.
Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask you, are you saying that you want us to have mandatory kindergarten? Because I don't understand that by the information that I see here. I see that you want to lower the age, compulsory age, to 6. But you did not say you want to mandate kindergarten. Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, I was trying to answer Senator Stevens' question.
But the question is, you're not trying to mandate kindergarten, are you?
Not in this particular bill.
Okay.
That was an artful answer.
Yeah,
we say in this bill you're not trying to, because you just said the lower age be 6.
Through the chair, we were just trying to get our foot in the door with this one, but we'd be happy to see others.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. George, I guess one of the quotes that were, since you were obviously paying attention probably better than I was last Friday, at the end of the article it said, you know, I would not want my education to be interrupted by my schooling.
Mark Twain.
And so with that in mind, I guess having a kid in school that much more doesn't necessarily, or at least he'd have the counter argument to what you have or are thinking. But my real question has to do with an extension of what Senator Stevens was talking about. As you look at other states that have got a lower or a distribution of compulsory school age at the lower level, do you have data to show how that correlates with graduation rates? Because that's the whole emphasis of this bill that I understand. We're trying to make the graduation rates as high or improve the graduation rates, and I'm not sure that having a lower compulsory kindergarten age is going to necessarily do that.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, in the position paper that we have, we cite reports, and I could get one of those reports for you, but there is a correlation between children who attend high quality preschools and kindergartners are less likely to be retained in primary grades, have higher graduation rates from high school, and have fewer behavior problems. And we used these research papers when we wrote our position paper so I could get you that information.
If you would. It's intuitive that that's the case, but do the numbers bear it out?
They do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. George. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
And just a pretty fundamental question that I really don't understand is if a child enters at seventh grade, at 7 years old, and proceeds through the school system, then that that means that they will spend 3 years before they're into the third grade, and that's where reading is so crucial. So we're not, if a kid starts at seven, he's not skipping a grade. He's still going first, second, and third. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, not always. It's up to the school to place the child.
And I assume they'd place it for place the child for a reason, that they were ready to move ahead. Or
They take all things into consideration, and a large child of age seven would probably not be put into a kindergarten classroom. Maybe a first grade, and then it would be the teacher's responsibility to try to catch them up.
Additional questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Huggins and Senator Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. George, the present we have compulsory education at age 16. And my limited experience is that if you drop out of school at age 15 and a half, that we as a society do not have the willpower to go out and enforce that age of 16. But help me out.
I'm sorry, I do not have, through the chair, I do not have that information, sir. I can try to get it, but I don't have it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a fundamental question we have to ask ourselves, because my experience in back in the good old school board days was that when we started looking at the arm that was going to go out and pursue the people that weren't in school, it didn't happen. We didn't have the willpower to do that. So, I don't want to be critical of what we're approaching here, but we got to make sure that this is a complete full-loop system that is workable, not just a statute.
Thank you. Senator Davis.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question for Mrs. George. I just want to make a statement. 95% of the children go to kindergarten, even though it's not mandatory for them to do that in this state. At least 95% of the kids do go to kindergarten.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify? Ms. George, thank you for your participation. You are such a familiar face because we have debated this issue over the years, and you've been consistently here with us. I saw two hands go up. We have about 5 minutes.
No, it's good. I just wanted to get our good broad shoulder friend, okay. Mr. Rose,
we'll,
is up here.
We'll start with Mr. Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'll try to keep it short because there's another person here that wants to testify. So we support this piece of legislation. There are some things that it's going to require school districts to do, and I would imagine that there will be some people who have concerns. Here's my major concern. How many of us are prepared to allow our 16-year-olds to make life decisions on an everyday basis? By statute, we allow people to actually leave school at age 16. The whole idea here is that, you know, many youngsters have not had success. Maybe they are not fully engaged in school. And I think that the decision is premature at age 16. What kind of rights does a 16-year-old person have anywhere else to do anything else? You can't even vote at that age. I would ask you to consider that a piece of legislation that mandating attendance at age 16, whether we can enforce it or whether we can't, sends a large statement on behalf of our state policy that says at age 16, you can decide whether you can want to leave school or not. And I think we want to elevate that to 18 years of age to say, you have a responsibility to be in school, to take advantage of this opportunity. And I would share one more thing with you. This is not part of the bill, but as I was listening back here, when you talk about a third grade benchmark, if kids are supposed to be on step by the third grade benchmark and you don't allow them or you don't require them to go to school till age 7, at the third grade benchmark is where we see the gap in achievement occur. By the third grade, when curriculum starts to steepen, we start to see the separation in terms of performance. That separation continues on and is one of the bases for dropout. So I would ask you to consider that. I don't want to go into too much detail right now, but I will tell you this. The whole spectrum of education is critically important. We want to engage our kids. We want to give them an opportunity. But don't send the message to kids that at age 16 they can decide not to no longer attend school. That's the wrong message. And if we're talking about public policy here, I'd ask you to consider the impact of that message. I'll hold my comments here.
Thank you. And Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess Carl's probably has the institutional knowledge better than most of us here about why the minimum age is 7 versus 6 versus 5 or any other.
Through the chair, for as long as I've known, it's been 7, and we have tried to lower it to 6. Fiscal notes have gotten in the way, as well as some parents don't want to be mandated to send their kids off to formal education until age 7. When you put in a piece of legislation like that, you will have people that will respond and say, we should not be required to send our kids to school any earlier. You'll find the same people responding when you start to talk about early childhood.
Thank you. It may be helpful if you've got additional information on that, Mr. Rose, to provide it to the committee. We will be holding the bill. I mean, it's going to be very unusual that we move a bill on the same day that we've heard it, and we will be holding the bill. And I'm a little bit concerned that we have one other member of the public that wants to testify here. Thank you, Mr. Rose.
But Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Rose gets away,
Senator Huggins.
One question, and I don't mean this flippantly, but we talked about the benchmark, No Child Left Behind, and being able to read by the third grade at a certain level, and expanding the age to 18. To be quite frank, I've always been one of those people that says, okay, at the third grade, if you can't read, then you stay in the third grade, if you follow my logic. And I remember just talking to principals over time and asked the question, do we have people that graduate from high school that can't read? And I said, yes. And my answer to that is a shame on us. If, you know, we're going to keep them there to 18, but yet they can't read, there's something wrong with our system if we do that. Help me out. Is that just a minor piece of a difficulty we have? I'll call it social promotion. I mean, you put whatever title you want on it. But to keep people around and, oh, by the way, they aren't learning or they can't read, no matter whether it's 16 or 18 or whatever it turns out to be, is a question I never could – I feel comfortable when I heard the answer.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, two things. I think you're talking about social promotion, but I'll tell you this. If you're requiring proficiency by the third grade and you don't allow or you don't require kids to go to school until they're 7 years old, many kids are in a second grade at 7 years old. The issue here is when kids come to school, are they ready to learn? If young people come into school and not prepared to learn, if they don't know the alphabets, if they're not even sight reading by the time they're in the third grade, you are already behind the curve. So if a child can't read at age 16, 17, 18, the problem happened back in elementary school when they didn't gain those skills. So this bill is about helping kids to graduate, and I support that component of it. I also heard some comments here that do merit some consideration in terms of ensuring that kids get the best bite of the apple early. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. And please, I apologize that you're being squeezed by the clock a little bit here. If you could identify yourself and your affiliation for the record.
For the record, my name is Amber Sawyer, and I'm talking to you today as a former Alaska Public School System graduate. I graduated from Colony High School in 2006, and I'm also talking to you as a big sister of two people who are currently in the system. I have a 9-year-old brother who attends Finger Lake Elementary, and he's in fourth grade there, and I have volunteered. I go to the University of Alaska in Anchorage, so I'm close enough that I can go in and help his class when I'm home for the weekend and such. And it's very easy to tell between my 9-year-old brother and my 17-year-old brother, who's currently a junior at Colony, the students that didn't start early and the students who are going to drop out. It was very easy to tell in middle school with my brother, even just among his hockey friends, when I would go and help them with the hockey, who took school seriously and who was going to drop out. There were students at age 14 when they were starting school who were seriously just biding their time until they could drop out. They were not looking for the programs that the schools have to help them get involved in VOTEC programs in the community or attending the alternative high schools where they can have a job while they're in school because they don't see any merit in being in school. And I know just from working with the fourth grade class at Finger Lake that the students know by then whether there's something in school for them. If you ask my 9-year-old brother what he wants to do when he grew up, he will tell you he wants to go to UAA. He's 9 years old. He can't even, you know, probably spell University of Alaska Anchorage, but that's where he wants to go. And he wants to graduate high school because there's something there for him. So if you can get the kids into school and get them to stay there to connect with someone and see something coming from the school for them, they will want to stay there, and therefore they will get something out of it because they want to put something into it and they want to get something out of it. They aren't just biding their time. They're not just there because they have to, because they don't see it like that. The parents do. And if they're there and they can connect to someone other than their parents and see it a different way, then they will get something out of school, and that's when the dollars will be well spent.
Thank you, and I appreciate your bumping us out of the numbers and out of concepts and into reality. Are there any questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to say hello to Amber. And as I recall, our daughter and son were classmates of yours.
Yes, and, sir. I used to play volleyball with Hallie.
Yeah, very good. And, you know, we just appreciate your coming out and testifying. It's important that we hear from the people of Alaska. And thank you very much, and good luck to you as a student.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. No further business before the committee. This bill will be held until a future hearing. I would remind members there is no meeting on Wednesday. On Friday, we're going to be taking up the SB 18, the post-secondary medical education program. That's the easier description is. That's the expanding the WAMI program. With no further business, we're adjourned.